And President and Representatives Boucher, Furness, Ellis, and Donley. And Representative Gruenberg is here to propose an amendment to the first matter on the committee schedule today, House Bill 143, by the Rules Committee, by request of the governor, an act relating to assessment of civil penalties in the Alaska Securities Act. And Representative Gruenberg has another commitment, so he's asked to address the committee first on this matter. Representative Gruenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your letting me sit up on the town to tailor it down there. I would like to propose an amendment, and it's labeled Amendment by Gruenberg, which I think every member should have a copy. It's a bill that was House Bill 143 in the last legislature. House Bill 126 in the 14th state legislature. And it passed the House by a wide majority. What the bill does is it amends the Alaska Securities Act. And it would require a broadening in the title. So the title would then be an act amending the Alaska Securities Act. I'd like to call your attention to the portion of the amendment that will add a new section 4. And this begins on the amendments at the bottom of page 1 going over to the top of page 2. And the members will recall when we debated this on the floor, this dealt with fraudulent oil and gas schemes and fly-by-night operators in the lower 48. We're offering fraudulent oil and gas schemes here in Alaska, some of them with the governor's picture on them, and there's no way under current law that they can be prosecuted up here. So this was introduced at the request of the governor last time. And as a matter of fact, it had been introduced 3 times and it passed each house separately but never both houses together. And we're hoping here that the 4th time is going to be the charm. And we amended this in at House Judiciary Committee in 1985 to include not only oil and gas schemes, but any interest in land located in Alaska, and any interest in an Alaskan corporation or a domestic limited partnership, that's an Alaska limited partnership, to the full extent permissible under the due process clause of the United States Constitution. And that language in Section 4 is, as I say, prevents any fraudulent securities dealings with any Alaskan corporation, any Alaskan limited partnership, or any Alaskan real estate transaction. And that was House Bill 126 as passed by the House. Section 1, which is on the top on page 1, that was added by Senator Rohde in the Senate Judiciary Committee, and it was part of House Bill 126. This amendment, as I indicated, was the latest version of 126, which died in Senate Finance last year. And what this did was to broaden the certain exemptions, as I understand it, and you gentlemen correct me if I'm wrong, certain exemptions from the registration requirements under the Alaska Securities Act. Normally, most securities have to be registered. However, certain securities involving profit sharing and pension plans don't have to be. And this conforms with federal law, as I understand it, and it's not just investment contracts any longer. It doesn't require certain notifications, but all these securities are to be exempt. And I think that has, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, gentlemen. I'm nodding at Mr. Carroll and Mr. Bush in the Attorney General's office back there, that they both have the blessing of the administration in this. We have a zero fiscal note. They're going to enforce it as much as possible within their current budgetary limitation, but it will not cost the state an extra dime, and we'll get a good law on the books that will keep some of these bad apples out of the state. Thank you,
Representative Gruenberg. Record should reflect Representative Bernard has joined us. Mr. Carroll and Jeff Bush. Yeah, would you like to join us? Flip a chair at the end of the table here.
Sure.
Did you want to address the
143 before it's amended?
Right.
Okay. My name is Larry Carroll, and I'm with the Division of Banking, Securities, and the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. and I thank you for the opportunity to speak with you concerning the measure we have requested in House Bill 143, which is the authority to assess civil penalties on certain securities violations. As I pointed out in our position paper, the governor's transmittal letter very accurately and correctly describes the current situation and the need for the proposed legislation. The question that I think might come to your mind is, when would you use this and why would you use it? Perhaps some examples. You may recall last year there was considerable news about E.F. Hutton, who was convicted in federal court for 200 felony violations involving a money concentration scheme. Our investigation disclosed that there was minimal participation in that scheme by the Alaska office, but because of its geographic location, it made a good spot for funneling checks. At any rate, the involvement was de minimis, and we had two choices. One was to hit them with a cease and desist order, thereby effectively closing the office for a period of time as a penalty, which would have been a disservice to Alaska customers who were utilizing the firm because it was too severe a penalty. And the other was to ignore it because we had no middle ground. In 13 other jurisdictions where these civil penalty provisions did exist, E.F. Hutton paid dearly, anywhere from $20,000 to $150,000, to say mea culpa, lose it alone, we corrected it, we'll be all right. There's a sample, an example of when that might come into play in dealing with a registered, somebody who was trying to do it right but stepped over the traces. How do you slap their wrist and get them to pay attention? The other situation that comes immediately to mind is the unregistered activity, where we have someone who has not bothered to familiarize themselves with the Securities Act or do those things that are necessary. We can issue a cease and desist order, which says, you know, don't do these things anymore, to which they can go, so what? And unless we go forward and bring a criminal case, which is an alternative that we have certainly, but that has to be weighed in terms of how egregious the offense was and the time limitations and the amount of resources that it takes both by this department and the Department of Law to do a successful criminal prosecution. Giving us these civil penalties does not preclude us from using criminal penalties, but is an extra tool that we can use. We can hit them with a fine. If you want to do business here, you pay the fine, you pay attention to the law, and you do what's right. Those are a couple of things that come immediately to mind where it would be useful. It's not operating in a vacuum. There are several, as I mentioned, other jurisdictions that do have these provisions, have added them to the Uniform Securities Act. And what we're asking is to bring ours more up to date, so to speak, and bring it in conformance with those, kind of modernize it. And I would be more than happy to answer any questions that you may have specifically. I have testified before this committee, other members, in the past 3 years concerning the amendments that Representative Bloomberg has suggested to you, and I can tell you that we heartily endorse those. We have had a cyclic reoccurrence of these oil and gas type frauds over the years, and I would be surprised to learn that not any of you had ever been contacted by someone with an opportunity for an oil and gas lease, either here or Montana. You have or haven't?
A number of times.
Yeah. Okay. Then at that point, need I say more? This is what was came up.
I wrote mine off.
Did you get your money back?
Congratulations.
Great. You wanted to shoot. Maybe you better come and give us lessons.
How many of those?
At any rate, we certainly endorse the inclusion of the amendment, and as Max accurately stated, we did propose this on three separate sessions. In one occasion it passed the Senate, did not pass the House. The next time it passed the House, it got through the Senate to the Rules Committee, didn't get any further. I should, in fairness, point out to you that on each of those occasions we had a fiscal note attached to that to to elicit some clerical support for what we expected in filings. And I think that that's probably the reason it didn't go anywhere. We don't have a fiscal note attached to this one. That doesn't mean that the fiscal note that we gave you before was erroneous. It just means that we're going to try and do it a different way because we think it's important that this law be passed.
Thank you. Why don't you just stay with us here for a second. Was there anybody else here to testify on this legislation? I was just curious. Did you have something specific in mind?
Mr. Chairman, perhaps I can just say a few other things that are related to what Larry has pointed out. My name is Jeff Bush with the Attorney General's Office. First of all, regarding existing or the present 143, one of the reasons that is pointed out in the governor's transmittal letter for this legislation, an important reason for it, is the difficulty and from a resource standpoint in prosecuting criminal cases involving these kinds of crimes. And as you have all heard, I'm sure repeatedly, the Department of Law is taking, under the governor's proposed budget, at least, some pretty serious cuts on the criminal side. One, I understand, I haven't seen the most revised version, but I understand that the white-collar crime unit has been eliminated in the new budget. It's going to be more difficult to prosecute these kinds of cases in the future, considerably more. And as Larry could tell you, it's been almost impossible to prosecute them in the past, and it's only going to get worse. That's one reason that this particular legislation is important, and one reason the main reason that, from farmer law's perspective, we think it's a good idea. Regarding the proposed amendments, one question that has come up every session, and I probably should just respond to it in anticipation of it again, is the constitutionality of it. There's been a question on whether or not the state has jurisdiction to regulate oil and gas leasing sale programs that are originating out of state, and where classically either a Florida operation or a California operation is selling all over the country to various individuals, selling interests in oil and gas leases in Alaska. And the question is, does Alaska have the authority to regulate that kind of activity? It's never been tested to a Supreme Court level, but we did test before we introduced the bill the first time 3 years ago. We took it through a Superior Court test case and won on the jurisdictional question in a rather lengthy opinion of Judge Brian Shortell out of Anchorage. Came out in support of the state's authority to have jurisdiction on it. That's as far as the constitutional question has ever gone, but the judge in Anchorage went along with the state on that.
Mr. Chairman, you and I, and mainly you, did the language on this, and specifically to ensure that it is constitutional. And that's why at the end it says jurisdiction under this paragraph may be exercised only when the exercise is not inconsistent with the Constitution of this state or the United States. So we don't want there to be any constitutional question.
That's correct. Representative Bloomberg, the thing, though, is that particular language applies to that paragraph, which was the paragraph having to do with corporations and limited partnerships rather than with oil and gas leases. And the oil and gas leases we have already tested through the Superior
Court. So you didn't feel it was necessary?
We didn't feel it was necessary for those. The question has never been tested having to do with corporations or partnerships. What we said is, if we do have the authority, then we want to be able to exercise it. And we've left that up to the courts to decide.
Are there any questions from members of the committee for either Representative Bloomberg or the gentleman here? Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, is this amendment before us?
Well, it'd be appropriate. A motion to incorporate the amendment in a committee substitute would be appropriate.
So moved.
Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, staff will draw up a committee substitute incorporating the amendment by Bloomberg, drafted by Legal Counsel Banister. What's the will of the committee regarding this piece of legislation at this time? I don't have any problems with that. Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, the committee substitute for House Bill 143 will be moved on to the next committee referral with individual recommendations. It's Judiciary. Thank you, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gentlemen.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Looks like we're 5 minutes ahead of time. Is that right? Are we scheduled for 2 o'clock on the, or can we roll into
time for a break? Well,
yeah, doing farm work. We didn't designate a time, so I guess we can go ahead and use it. Next up is 2 o'clock.
We'll move ahead, work factor six
here. The next two pieces of legislation are referred to the committee from Representative Boucher's Special Committee on Telecommunications. Representative Boucher, would you like to address the committee on House Bill 23, first of all?
Yes, and if it's all right, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to stay here. I've never heard so much dialogue on a one-page bill in my life, and telecommunications by its very nature. I've been 3 years into it, and I'm still trying to understand what they're talking about. So I thought maybe just a bit of history, why this piece of legislation. First of all, the major reason that the House Special Committee on Telecommunications came about was because of the AT&T divestiture. I'm just learning how to pronounce that word there too, but simply stated, in January 1 of 1984, the 22 local Bell operating companies became 7 independent regional phone companies. And by and large, the breakup had effect on everyone who uses a telephone and every aspect of the U.S. domestic telephone industry, from the yellow pages to the manufacture of telephones. And obviously, with the breakup of something as big as AT&T, the fallout is still falling. It introduced to the market new words such as divestiture. Well, simply stated, IBM was making telephones, Bell Labs were making computers, and they just said, let's deregulate this, let's break this apart. We've seen words such as access fees, universal telephone service, and bypass. By and large, I tried to get a good packet of simply stated information. I'm sorry it wasn't in your folder, but we just got, this is the Congressional Research Service on the AT&T divestiture problem, and it might be good later on because in our daily lives, this is going to keep coming up. While they deregulated our sister states to the south, Alaska had rather complex problems. Simply stated, we were getting between $80 and $100 million a year from a pool of money from the South 48. And if that had been pulled, which AT&T wanted to have it pulled, it would have thrown our telephone service in the state into chaos. Where simply stated, whether most people realize it or not, anywhere from $40 to $100 million flows in to Alaska from other parts of the country to support the telephone service. And obviously with the change in the structure, it's created problems probably isn't the word. It's created an unsettled market in telecommunications in the state. Our APUC commission went before FCC and said, hey, just a minute, before you go pulling the plug on Alaska, where a rather different place, change in telecommunications up there can adversely impact us, will you wait? So in the process, a joint board was formed in Washington, D.C., primarily consisting for the most part, rural states, and it is now in the process of meeting. So some of the issues as far as regulation, deregulation, competitive, non-competitive, are still before them. For us to enact any legislation that deals with these areas could be sending mixed signals out, especially when the battle is currently in Washington. The purpose of the House Special Committee on Telecommunication, amongst other things, was to bring this to the attention of the legislature. Then we also worked closely with the people in Washington and said, what can we do as a legislator to say that we recognize it? So there are two things that other states have adopted, and this is where these two pieces of legislation came from. One is the word universal service. That isn't something we've concocted. It's a national buzzword. Simply stated, it means that a telephone is no longer a luxury. You know, it's a part of our daily way of life, and certainly that is true. And that the public should have affordable service. Let's motivate what they do. So it became a word. Washington, we have no indication that Alaska is interested in universal service in our laws. So we started out to simply make a statement to that effect. Well, like anything else in this highly emotional area of telecommunication, other people want to add other things on it. And I finally decided after 3 years of doing this that we're going to deal with two things. One deal with universal service and the other deal lifeline rates. Universal service simply states that the public has a right to telephone service at affordable rates. Now, why do you need to make a statement like this? Well, let me give you an example. Prior to AT&T divestiture and new technology, and this only dates back 7 years ago, everybody in Alaska used to use the telephone service. Then, led by ARCO and some other people, they just popped their satellite up and did what you call bypass, which means we're not using your system, we don't pay your bills. The banks have begun to bypass in Alaska, which simply means they're off the line. So bit by bit, where you had X amount of subscribers, the amount of subscribers are falling. And this could happen nationally. So this, what about the person of fixed income or moderate income that's still online? They can't bypass. They can't set a satellite up there. So this is a statement that places telephone communication as almost a communication bill of rights. So it's rather simple. That would be, let's say, House Bill 5. Now, that stated it right down to line 17. Then, at the request of a number of people over the last 2 years, we wanted to get something about the competitive, non-competitive, regulated, deregulated. And we got ourselves embroiled in the FCC decision. The principals are battling over it. I talked again with John Katz and Martha Fox today, and he says, as far as we are concerned, anything relative to do with that is going to be handled back in Washington, D.C. And so, after considerable discussion, and some people are not happy about it, but I think we need to move ahead and make a statement on universal services to the federal communication system so that they can look upon us as a responsible state, because there's a lot of money at stake. If Alaska's saying, hey, we don't care about universal service, we don't care about lifeline rates, we can find that subsidy shrink. So we need to get on the national agenda as supporting lifeline rates and universal services. You'll probably hear different points of view, like the letter, Mr. Williams is here today, and the letter before you, that he states, as telecommunications contractors licensed within the state, we would like to register our approval and support for House Bill 5, as presented to you with specific reference to paragraph 3. Paragraph 3 doesn't have anything to do with universal services. And we were trying to accommodate people, but we find out that we're getting in the middle of the crossfire. If someone wants to deal with the competitive, non-competitive issues, we will be glad to deal with this in separate legislation and give it a fair hearing. But what I would like to do right now is not see universal service crippled for another year as it's caught up in the national argument on it. So, therefore, Mr. Chairman, on the bill before you, the committee substitute, I have made a recommendation, and this was in concert with our people in Washington, that where the words telecommunication is, that we change that to telecommunications.
Representative Boucher?
Yes, sir.
We're on House Bill 23 right now.
I'm sorry.
Are you talking? Your amendment's referencing House Bill 5?
Yes, sir.
I think it's appropriate to, since, you know, they're related, to talk about both at the same time.
Right, I'm sorry, my apologies.
But if there's specific amendments, we ought to go ahead and deal with 23 and then go on to 12.
23 pretty well stands on its own. And there's reference in here to lifeline rates. Last year, the bill got hung up because somebody didn't like the fact that it was lifeline rates and that it would take care of the poor. And you know, I stopped in the Senate. And basically what we're saying here is our laws make no provision for a telephone company to give discounted service to the elderly or the poor. They're prohibited from doing it. This law does not mandate that they do it. It's simply permissible. If XYZ company wants to give a 15% discount to the elderly, they can do it. Right now they can. So that's what lifeline rates mean.
Through the chair, just a quick question. To the elderly or to low income?
Low income. Here, it's pretty well deferred. I mean, here, phone banks, poor, elderly.
So but it's based on income level as opposed to age.
That's right.
Okay.
And then there was a big question, how do we work it out? How do we apportion it? Well, we're not going to get into that, number one. We're not asking that it be mandated. We're simply saying that on our books appears the opportunity to do it. We kick this around, and I think that the telephone company people are satisfied that it doesn't say they have to do it. But as the book says now, it says they can't do it. So it's optional.
So on the House Bill 23, the committee substitute the special community on telecommunications. Mm-hmm. You don't have any suggestions for any changes?
No, we just was one word that was changed. You know, this whole telecommunication people are very sensitive how you use words. It said, and the word initiate, which was on the original bill on line 12, for some reason or other, they want proposed.
Okay.
That's fine with me.
There's anything else?
As I understand it from debate on the floor last year, there is a phone concern here in Alaska if you wanted to offer such a service.
I don't know that. That may be the case. Chris Herberger, who was my staff assistant this year and is your staff assistant, I might address it. Was there somebody that wanted to do it, Chris? I wasn't aware of that. They have to go through the process.
The response is negative.
Well, you heard a lot of scuttlebutt on this stuff. By and large, I haven't noticed anybody standing in line. They just don't. They have said, "Hey, we don't want to be told we have to do it." But it's okay if it could be proposed. It would have to go through the entire process with APUC, etc., and maybe even to the legislative level. But it's permissible.
Maybe I just, Mr. Chairman, maybe I just remember that incorrectly from last time this was debated on the House floor, because I thought there was the phone company in Fairbanks wanted to do that. I don't know.
Well,
I may have mixed up
your predecessor and myself had a bit of difficulty because he kind of jumped in at the last minute and thought, my goodness, this isn't a bill for the floor or what have you. And but it's about as much as we can do. We're simply making a statement that there ought to be an opportunity for the poor or whoever that can't afford telephone service because of this whole thing, that telephone services may propose.
Are there any members of the public here to testify on House Bill 23? I know a lot of people are here to testify on both. Sharon?
My name is Sharon Macklin, and I represent Matanuska Telephone Association, and we're a member of the Alaska Telephone Association. And I thought just to clarify where some of the telephone companies are on this issue, we do support this bill. And I believe Fairbanks right now has initiated a low income lifeline rate. And I think the testimony in the past has been that there's something like 20 people that are taking advantage of utilizing that service, but it isn't an overwhelming number. I know Matanuska Telephone is looking at also initiating some sort of service for people who are not able to provide full telephone service. So, but just to give you a little historic background, Lifeline is something that is an issue that's been looked at certainly on a federal level, lots of, we know of many states, and I don't have their names, that have adopted legislation of this sort. This is an issue that the APUC in the past has supported, and the Telephone Association also has supported it, and we'd like to see the bill pass this session if possible. And I'll answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions from members of the committee? I have a couple real basic questions, Chair. First of all, any proposal would be have to be approved by APUC for a discounted rate?
It's regulated.
It's regulated.
Right. And one of the issues that we, the reason we feel very comfortable with this bill is because the APUC cannot mandate a lifeline rate. Each telephone company has the option of initiating or proposing a discounted service. So it isn't something that will be forced on companies that don't feel that they're ready for this kind of service.
And it seems to me like, is the thinking behind this really that there's some folks out there that need emergency medical services and such that are so poor? It's not just to talk on the phone. It's really for important communications for those who really need that.
Definitely. In fact, I believe someone mentioned to me right before we came up here that I came up that in Fairbanks it's a measured service for low-income people, so that, you know, if you use over, I don't know, 10 or 15 calls a month, then it's not considered a discounted service.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Are there any other members of the public wishing to testify on House Bill 23?
I get a fit of painful. Peter, could you come, if I may?
Sure.
Peter Froelich is in the AG's office. It's handled probably most of the telecommunications issue before.
The matter before us is House Bill 23.
Lifeline.
We've already had a statement from Representative Boucher explaining the purpose of the legislation and some supportive testimony from Sharon Macklin representing telephone utilities. That's something that they would like. And do you have any comments on the legislation?
Yes, just briefly, Mr. Chairman.
Could you just state your name?
Yes. My name is Peter Froelich. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law. And part of my job for the last 4 years or so has included working on telecommunications matters, primarily acting as a liaison with the governor's office in Washington, D.C., and the outside counsel representing the state in Washington, D.C., in court and FCC matters. And I was here to speak in support of both this bill and HB 5, which perhaps you haven't
we
come
haven't
to
ma-
yet.
We haven't made that for you.
Okay. And just very briefly, of course, this bill doesn't affect the state directly, but we think that it's a logical measure and that it makes a very good sense to remove the current bar that prevents telephone utilities from granting these discounted rates. And it's in accord with the national trend. Many states have gone farther. We like this approach because it doesn't impose a burden on the state, just as it doesn't impose any burden or obligation on utilities themselves. They will just have added discretion under this measure. So that's really the sum of what I have to say on that. And if I could just go ahead and briefly address HB 5, which is a policy articulation. Do you want me to hold on?
Yeah. You've got it. If you can stay with us, if you have a time problem.
All right. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions that the committee might have on this HB 23.
Okay. You don't have any time problems sticking around for another 5-10 minutes to get to HB.
Okay. That's fine.
All right. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any discussion on this subject? The only question I had, Representative Boucher, was there any conversation in telecommunications about the definition of low income? Just a generic term?
Yeah, it's been for 2 years. We were hung up more on how it was going to be dispensed, low income, what is it, and
is it
the bigger we expanded that, we were going to lose the baby with the water. So we just said universal service, and then I think that's appropriate for community and regional affairs are those people that determine that. I think that issue would certainly come up at the time that APUC approved it. That would all come to the floor.
Okay.
So we try to But lo and behold, the minute it grew farther, every department was in here saying, what are you doing defining who's poor and who isn't? So rather than fight the bureaucracy, we just tried to go over the top of it.
Is there any further committee discussion?
I'd like to thank Representative Dawson for the work he's done on this.
Thank your staff person.
Chair would entertain a motion or any intent or further.
When this thing passes, if it ever does.
Entertain a motion that we've moved out of committee with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, the motion passes. Okay, now we have House Bill 5 before us. Representative Boucher, I think you've already pretty much covered the intent of House Bill 5. You mentioned that you had a suggested amendment to delete the subparagraph 3.
Yes, and I think that was probably what would bring up discussion today. So I think it's very appropriate that with your blessing that I introduced the amendment, then the amendment be here for discussion and people be allowed to testify on it. I think you get probably several points of view. If I may, let's go back to the legislation itself. What is it intended to do? It's intended to indicate that the state of Alaska recognizes a telephone as a vital part of everyday life. Along, once again, Lifeline, rates, those are other states. This universal service, this concept of telephone, is not just a luxury. We had to be pretty careful in how we worded these things because, once again, a piece of legislation that's perceived to get involved with the ongoing FCC hearings that are being held regarding the Alaska issue just seems to strike sparks all over the place. But nobody, it appears, is opposed to universal service. Now, in response and in my naivety to several people, I decided I would try because some people asked, add something else into it. Lo and behold, paragraph 18 became a time bomb. You know, we are all of a sudden, if you say in the telephone industry today, competitive, non-competitive, boy, they'll come out of the walls at you. If you say regulated, deregulated, and I said, whoa, just a minute, I'm going to back off this one. This is an issue, regulated, transferring of funds or what have you, as you can read in that thing. It's going on all over the place. There are fights all over the place on it. There is one in Alaska. I don't want this piece of legislation to get involved in that. So therefore, I am recommending that there be some amendments to it. I think that you have the copies of them, if you bear with me.
I don't have a copy of them.
Okay. I think I stuck it in your folder.
Pass, I already marked up my bills to pass it on the wall.
Okay, these were made in concert with one final check with what's going on in Washington, D.C. We talked to John Katz this morning. And I'm sure probably the committee has heard from both sides of this issue. You've been probably talked to, understandably so. But let's get to the simple ones. Line 6, where the word telecommunication, just make that plural. Telecommunication. Line 11, once again, telecommunication. Line 14, someone thought that advance was too strong a word. So we recommend instead of maintain and advance, maintain and further. Boy, I'm going to tell you, some sensitive people out here.
I'd like to remind the members, this is not the Judiciary
Committee. Right. Oh, God, I know. Well,
I imagine we'll hear it over there. They'll probably want it back to the other one. Then line 15, after service, semicolon, the word and. On line 16, there was a concern about the word charges and the proper word to use and in the communication vernacular is rates. then under line 16, once again, change telecommunication to telecommunications. Services are reasonable, period. Now, then I've recommended, as a part of the motion, that line 18 through 20 be removed. And as you'll probably hear, there'll be pros and cons on this. I think Mr. Jeff's letter says it all, that our approval and support for House Bill 5 is presented to you with specific reference to paragraph 3. I made the statement earlier, I want universal service. I think the people of Alaska deserve to go on it, and there's a lot at stake here. Now, I think that anybody that's been involved in this issue knows there's two big players out there pounding on each other, and anybody that gets involved in these issues will know that they are. And I'm not going to take sides on this competitive, non-competitive, that's being solved, and I talked to John Katz and the people back in Washington, and they said, this is an ongoing process. The companies that are battling on this issue, and I think that's the arena that it should be solved in. If I felt this would do anything, I would make a statement, be okay. But I just don't want to see universal services stopped. It's obvious from reading the letter that the concern is the competitive, non-competitive. There isn't a sentence in here about universal service, and that's the main thing that this piece of legislation is all about.
Representative Bounce, would you like to move to have them incorporated in a committee substitute for purposes of discussion?
Shut up.
Is there any objection to having those incorporated as a committee substitute for purposes of discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I ask adjournment number 3. I understand there are some people here to testify that perhaps before we change that, we don't want to hear the testimony.
That's what I wanted to hear.
Okay, all right. Well, then discussion will center on the House Special Committee of Telecommunications Committee substitute, and we'll take some public testimony with that before us and have Representative Boucher's motion under advisement. House Bill 5. Do you state your name and any affiliation of who you represent?
My name is Jeff Williams. I'm the author of that letter. General manager of Jefferson Williams Company, located here in Juneau. We're a very small, not big powers, bucking heads with the phone company or anything like that. The entire interconnect industry in the state is very small, probably numbers under 500 people. And the interconnect is the competitive side of providing telephone service. We have no guaranteed income. It's strictly hustle bustle, pure competitive. And I can understand Representative Boucher's concern for the universal service part of that bill being held up because of paragraph 3. And I guess all I can do is voice my disappointment that has become such a big issue. I think it's an issue that should be addressed at some time, because essentially it boils down to just fair competition. The telephone utilities, the telephone companies using their guaranteed profits from their regulated side of their business to subsidize their competitive, unregulated side of their business. And we know what happens to the prices when the competition goes away. They'll go sky high. And just to give you an example, in the 3 years that we've been in business, prices have dropped from $72 an hour to $38 an hour. Cost of a telephone installation for businesses and commercial businesses have dropped from about $1,000 a telephone down to between $200 and $400. And that's what competition does. And I think it's competition is what has done this. And that's why it's important that paragraph 3, I feel it should remain with that bill. I'm strong with that. Because once they drive out the little guy, up goes competition, up goes the price.
Thank you, sir. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Representative Boucher?
I think one of the things, Jeff, I talked to you briefly about this. I have no objection to introducing a piece of legislation, if you want to, that deals with that issue. Mm-hmm. I've stated that. Draft up whatever you want. In fact, maybe there are people that can help you. But we have struggled for 2 years to just get universal service up. And every time somebody sees universal service, it's like a popular bill. They want to put something on it.
I understand that.
The issue that we're talking about here is being, I hope, resolved in a fair manner in Washington, D.C. If we pass a piece of legislation, to the best of my knowledge, and maybe somebody far brighter than I can on this issue, all it will be is a statement. I think everybody agrees that competition, you know, is in the general sense of the word, it's a good thing, but I think it's left with this divestiture to FCC before our board now.
You're talking about the APUC?
Yes. Board.
Okay.
No, let me just correct something. Probably sometimes you assume the other person knows. You heard about my statements about divestiture. Mm-hmm. All the other states now are deregulated in most instances. Alaska's not. Mm-hmm. Because we would have been severely crippled if they'd immediately impacted us with deregulation, in that the money wouldn't have been flowing. So a joint board was formed. Now, I'm not going to get into all of the politics of whether it was formed or what have you. All I'm saying is the joint board was formed and it's meeting now in Alaska. Commissioner Weatherly is one of the members of that board. And they are coming to grips with issues such as the competitive, non-competitive, regulated, deregulated. So, and when it was first put in, I said, okay, if nobody has a problem with the with that, fine. But the minute it came in, boom, and you probably hear strongly from both sides.
I understand what you're saying. Wasn't that $100 million, $150 million, those simply long distance, a subsidy from AT&T?
I think probably Peter Froelich can deal with
that's correct. Yeah, because what we're referring to on the subsidy of the telephone companies, at least as I understand paragraph 3, is strictly the deregulated terminal equipment. I realize.
Oh, no, they don't interpret it as that.
Okay, now who doesn't interpret it as that?
I mean, all of the players in it. The telephone companies, they say, hey, telecommunications is a broad picture, and understandably, there's a lot at stake in there. So,
well, I'm just a little disappointed that maybe this body doesn't want to take a stronger stance on just the merits of competition.
Okay, now if you
maybe
sit down and draft up
a
piece of legislation that deals with that,
yeah.
I'll give it a number and it'll be heard.
Okay. Well, what we will do is I will be getting in touch with you then. And see what we can do. That's fair enough to me.
Are there any further questions of the witness?
Thank you, sir.
Are there any other members of the public wishing to testify on House Bill 5? Please come forward, sir.
My name is Jim Clark. I represent GCI, and I have a very, very unusual request. I met with the Representative Boucher last night at his request to discuss this legislation, and I told him that I would try to get an answer for him early this morning, get it to him and to his staff, and I just got an answer now, and needless to say, I don't think Representative Boucher is going to be dancing in the street about the answers I got. I just wondered if there'd be any possibility of you're considering holding this over a day so I could talk to Representative Boucher rather than do here at this table what I've been asked to do. I'd much prefer, in fairness to him, to just sit and discuss this with him for a little while so that he has full opportunity to respond. And I know this is extremely unusual, but I really feel an obligation to him because he's been so considerate and so fair to me, and I don't want to... I just feel that this is just, to my mind, Representative Donnelly, Mr. Chairman, I really feel that it's just a fair way to deal with Representative Boucher, for whom I have the greatest and highest respect.
Well, is there something that you can't say here?
No, I'll say it here, but I just would prefer to have a chance to brief you first.
I have no problem with... what are you time out?
Well, let's see here. Let me think about this a second.
I apologize for such an unusual thing, but I feel I have an obligation.
Well, let's just take a little informal recess is there any objections from members of the committee taking a 5-minute recess here?
Okay.
Are there any objections?
No.
Seeing no objections, we'll take a 5-minute recess.
Very easy.
We're going to go back on the record here.
What we might do, if without objection, Mr. Chair, this has been part of the ongoing process over the past 2.5 years. This particular piece of legislation, no matter whether you introduce a whereas, a what for, it's perceived by either the two major proponents before FCC right now as a threat to what's your hidden agenda. I simply want to articulate at the legislative level, at the request of the people back in Washington, APUC, that we are in tune with what already is public policy. And I've been careful not to try and expand this beyond it. Now, whichever side is on the issue tends to see it as a threat. So we have worked pretty close with Peter on the issue, and I think it's fair for Jim to present his point of view or anybody else on it, if you have the patience to do that, because that's why I wanted people to be able to express. As far as I'm concerned, I want to move on ahead with universal services. I am not, no way, going to be able through this body or this thing solve the ongoing battle that is existing. I think that has to be solved in Washington.
I'd like to call Rebecca Bear.
it's gotten serious now that I've done
that. Position on this matter, the APUC position. Could you enlighten us
to that? The APUC position is that this is a very complex issue, and that if in fact, and as Ted Meninsky said, Becky, I can't explain this to you in 5 minutes for you to sit down and say this to the committee. So if in fact there is going to be a discussion of the issue, then the request of the APUC is that you hold the bill over so they may teleconference in and be a participant in that discussion. If you are going to pass the bill, as Representative Boucher has suggested, without Section 3, then obviously it's not controversial and the APUC has nothing to say.
Thank you. It seems like we have time's real precious for all of us. We've got a little bit of time here. The chair is inclined to take some testimony regarding the issue of whether to leave paragraph 3 in or whether to take paragraph 3 out. As long as everybody's here, how does the rest of the committee feel about that?
I can go until 3 o'clock.
I can go until 3. Let's get some testimony.
All right, let's get some testimony. Mr. Clark, would you like to rejoin us if you're willing to present your testimony on why paragraph 3 should be left in this piece of legislation?
Mr. Chairman, first of all, I'd like to thank the patience of the committee and for granting me the short opportunity to talk with Representative Boucher. I agree, incidentally, with almost everything Representative Boucher said, except for one thing. We don't believe that he has any hidden agenda here. I believe that he has been very, very fair and in a most difficult situation, and I don't attribute anything other than trying to come up with a good overall policy for the state to Representative Boucher, so I just want to make that absolutely clear on the record. This area is extremely controversial for this reason, and I think we ought to get that on the record.
Right.
We have what amount to two absolutely competing philosophies of management going on here. On the one hand, we have the old, and I don't mean to, again, words become very important. We have the monopoly approach to utility management under which Alascom is regulated. You have the newcomer, GCI, coming into this situation as an unregulated competitor in the interstate side. The rules are different for each. The monopoly type people are paid on the basis of the investment that they make to get a return on their investment. People like GCI are paid simply on how they can reduce operating costs, what they can do in terms of being a better competitor. So we have two completely different management systems, and each side looking at the other as somewhat something of a threat. And this has become an extremely emotionally charged area that has spilled over here, and in the Alaska legislature, it spilled over in Washington, D.C. Until there is some kind of long-term resolution that comes from the joint board of which Representative Boucher spoke, I think that it's going to continue. It's just unfortunate. I don't think it should, but it will, and it's going to be more a result of the systems than anything else. Now, with respect to this particular piece of legislation that you had before you, what we are most interested in is a policy of maintaining the status quo. And let me describe what the status quo was. In 1984, there were essentially two orders that were issued by the FCC. One was the so-called transitional supplement order, and that was $15 million in addition to the basic $100 million supplement or subsidy that was paid to Alaska to provide universal, affordable service in the state. The other order was an order related to GCI, which basically ordered AT&T to come up with a means of providing a link-up for GCI with the lower 48. GCI and AT&T formed an agreement. In lieu of the FCC order, they came to an agreement between them that resolved a long-standing antitrust case between the two, and basically came up with a different means of going forward with the AT&T, or excuse me, the FCC order. And they presented that order to the FCC. The FCC approved the order. The order, and that was really the status quo pending the joint board decision, which was and continues to be a couple of years into the future. Earlier this year, two things happened to unsettle the status quo. One thing was a Ninth Circuit decision that said we are going to remand the GCI AT&T settlement that the FCC approved back to the FCC for further consideration. And the other thing was a request by Alascom for emergency consideration of the supplemental subsidy which would have been given to Alascom, which was granted by the FCC, and the FCC said, well, if you don't want the supplemental, it said in effect, if you don't want the supplemental subsidy, we'll do away with it. Now, with no supplemental subsidy, i.e. one leg of the stool of this very complex transaction, the next step was for Alascom to say, now what we want you to do, we want an emergency order to take away the GCI agreement with AT&T or the GCI order. So that is the situation that occurred starting in January this year, Mr. Chairman, through February. These two orders came down. I think the latest one was February 9th. And that's the situation in which this legislation appears on the scene. So the question is, to my clients, GCI, what does this do to the status quo? How does it change it? In the first instance, with the first two, with the third sentence out, or the third proviso here out, starting at line 19, the question is, why is it necessary? This has been existing state policy. What is it the legislature is trying to do? Representative Boucher says, and he's correct, that there is no statement of the legislature on the record, and the idea here is to do that. Probably at this stage of the game, we'd like to see, if there's going to be some statement about universal service in this changing status quo, we'd like to see something in there that's pro-competitive. And that's why we had absolutely no objection up until 5:30 last night when we were informed that Section 3 was going to, that Representative Boucher was going to recommend that this come out. And it's taken me this long to get hold of my people and find out what their response to that was. They looked upon it as a balanced thing, a statement about universal service on the one hand, which is fine, and then something about competition on the other hand, which they wanted to see in there. That created a balance. The Representative Boucher informed us that number three came out. We had nothing except a statement that seemed to reflect what was already the state policy. That caused a lot of concern. And the idea was then, well, why don't we then put in more pro-competitive language in this thing? Because obviously the competitive situation in this state has caused rates to drop 36% in 9 months for long-distance users. And that affects not just Alaska, not just GCI, but every single user of telephone service in the state. So we feel that competition's been very, very good for the state. Why, if we're going to make a policy statement, do we avoid making a statement about competition? And why, in a situation where Alaskom has said do away with our subsidy, which was state policy, the notion, I think Peter backed me up, the idea of the transitional supplement and maintaining the transitional supplement was state policy up until about 2 months ago.
Okay, and Mr. Clark, can I take a shot at this in like two sentences?
Yeah.
You like the bill if it includes three, but if the bill doesn't include three, you think it favors Alaskom in some manner because they have an overall, they're more universal service oriented.
I think universal service is more that way, yeah. We'd like to, and Mr. Chairman, just, I hate to take up 30 seconds more of your time, but if I could.
I don't mind 30 seconds.
I just don't want to hear it again. I understand. But what's important is that a key provision of state policy got changed when we took away the transitional supplement. And that really has to be understood at their request. And so what's happened when they did away with the transitional supplement, which was supposedly to help support interstate service, Alaskom has asked for a 6% rise in intrastate services before the APUC. And that's why the statement about not supporting, subsidizing your intrastate side, your interstate side with the intrastate side was very important to us. We think also important to the ratepayer because that has to do with maintaining the status quo. Now, I think it could be worded a little differently. We could suggest wording changes, but rather than do that, the basic idea was there that you don't support your interstate operations with intrastate hikes, and that's exactly what happened. When the transitional supplement went out that was there to provide extra money for interstate services, Alaskom requested a 6% increase on the intrastate side. Now, we thought this is what they were getting at, what was being got at here. Now, I found out last night that that wasn't what it was you were getting at. Something else in terms of some other individual with an idea here. But we thought that created a balance in this thing and said we're not going to countenance that kind of activity. And it had a tendency to support the status quo, which we'd really like to see maintained until such time as the joint board makes a decision. Now, I apologize for the length, the complicatedness of all this, but I've tried to be as quick as I can.
Could he just, Peter, just get one comment in, and then we can, if the bill doesn't move out today, we'll find that's okay with me.
I'd just like to hear a balance here, Representative Boucher. I'd like to hear from a representative of the last one, actually, is what I'd like
okay,
to
good. All right, fine. You can
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Ronwell, and I represent Alaska. I really think what you've got here is starting to begin to compare apples and oranges, and in deference to Representative Boucher, we have tried to keep out of this whole area that Jim has just talked about because that's an issue that's being fought out before the joint boards and joint board in Washington, and I think it's a different issue. As Becky really articulated very well, if you're talking about universal service, making a statement on universal service and public policy vis-a-vis universal service, one and two do it, three is ancillary to that. Now, if you want to talk about changing one and two and getting into the global telecommunications policy that gets into the Alaskom GCI, we think you've got an entirely different bill, and quite frankly, you've got a cat fight on your hands. In deference to Representative Boucher, we've just been focusing on point three, saying, look, at what does this have to do with universal service policy? We have tried not to bring that issue before the committee so that we waste everybody's time, but work directly with Representative Boucher and his staff. And I, frankly, as of last night, I thought we had it all worked out. So I think that if you begin to change other sections of the bill, we've got an entirely different policy argument. We'll bring our people in, GCI will bring their people in, and you're off to the races. I'm not suggesting what the committee wants to should do with this. All I'm saying is be aware that you're into an entirely different policy arena when you start talking about those areas. And that's, I guess our message would be we'd like to see one and two stay and three dropped and to get out of it because we think that's really what the issues are, and that's what we tried to work with Representative Boucher on. I thought we had an agreement on it.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Prince?
Well, maybe just to zero in just a little bit more. Does Alaskom object to number three?
Yes.
Okay. Any further questions from members of the committee? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Now, is there a comment from the Attorney General's office?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Peter Freilich, Assistant Attorney General. I'm a little uncomfortable in the third position here.
That's the public policy position.
I'm not sure that I can immediately mediate this difference between the two competitors that you've just heard from. But I do want to make a couple observations. One is that this bill is intended to be an articulation of state utility, telephone utility regulation policy. And of course, there are only certain activities and certain telecommunication utilities that are regulated by the state. Most of it is covered by the Federal Communications Commission. And most of what you just heard Mr. Clark describe, as he was describing how we built up to the status quo, and it's true that as he described accurately, I think, things have changed rather quickly for the Alaska competitors just in the last couple months, that is since New Year's Eve, basically. But that's all in the federal realm. This bill doesn't have anything directly to do with that. Of course, there's everything is sort of mixing itself back and forth to some extent, but that's really the reason why the state wanted to see something like really just number one in this bill. That is an articulation of the state policy that we've been promoting. Alaskom and GCI and the state of Alaska all espouse this policy, that is promote universal telephone service, which is, I think, a consensus policy. It's hard to define. Sometimes we can possibly get into differences in the definition. It essentially means phones for everybody, affordable telephones in everybody's home who wants one. That policy is, like I say, probably a consensus. As stated here, nobody's disagreed with it. The second policy, reasonable rates, again, I don't think either of these competitors or the state disagrees with that. It's another consensus. Competition is probably also a consensus policy, but it's a new enough concept in this industry that there's a lot of dispute about definition, about language, it's not necessary to articulate a policy on competition to articulate a policy on universal service and reasonable rates. Therefore, it seems logical to omit the difficult to define controversial subject, a competition policy, and only articulate that on which there is a consensus. It's true, these are already state policies. We have been saying that to the FCC for years now. They haven't exactly asked, okay, show us in your statutes where it says that's your policy. But it would be nice to have a place that we can point. And in the repeated comments and briefs that we're writing to the FCC and the courts, be able to say it's the state's policy to promote universal service, site AS4205145. And so that's really all we're talking about here. And I guess that not speaking for the state, but just my personal reaction is that this recent development here with one of these competitors coming forward with some problems, I think probably should emphasize to the committee why it should just leave number three out and go ahead with the consensus one and two.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Curtis.
Yes, to the chair, to Mr. Frog. Number three, you had indicated again that this is something that's currently being handled in the courts and on more of a national basis, the FCC. What is the effect, should this item stay in the legislation and pass?
I think that's, Representative Furness, through the chair, it's really hard to quantify. It just as number one and two would give the state something to point to and say, here's proof that universal service is state policy. Either any party to an FCC proceeding or court proceeding could
come up with a whatever interpretation of this language and use it to possibly support, you know, whatever their view is on competition. So, I mean, I'm not sure if I can be more specific. I think the point is just that it is subject to dispute and varying interpretation, and therefore it's not a consensus, and therefore it probably doesn't belong in an articulation of state policy.
Well, here's the situation as I see it. This is the final committee referral on this legislation, so we do have some questions raised here. I want to have a little brief discussion, because we're going to lose our members real soon here, about whether we want to go ahead, and it seems like the issue before us is if we want to delete paragraph 3, then we can go ahead and pass out a committee substitute without paragraph 3. If we want to keep a statement in here about competitive, non-competitive, then we're going to need more hearings on this legislation. And I'm just going to throw it out to the will of the committee here, because this is the final committee referral, how we want to address that. Now, if there's unanimous consent here that we want to just delete paragraph 3, then there's no reason keeping the bill around. But if somebody wants to continue to address that issue at a later time, then we're going to have to hold this legislation over and have a full-blown hearing on it and have the APUC in here to testify. Now, can I hear some comments from members of the committee how they want to proceed on this?
Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to do is, this is sort of new, can we at least hold it to the next meeting? Just continue at that point. I'd like an opportunity to discuss it.
Normally, I'd like to do that too, except I'm afraid the next meeting, our calendar is going to be real jammed up, and we're going to have a 3 o'clock cutoff time with that too. That's the problem we've talked about before, just a logistics problem with the committee to run into. So it would probably be postponed until next Tuesday or further on down the line. Just practically, that's probably when the next time the people will get to it. Representative Menard?
I would like to have the piece held over, and from what I hear, I would at least like to hear some more testimony on this number 3 before I make a decision to keep it in or out.
Okay, that's fair. Representative Boucher?
I got some feelings about it. It's a constant, ongoing education process, and I'm a little ticked off minded because, damn it, some of the people that have been going to give some input to this keep showing up at the last minute, and it's a shame. We're failing to make a statement, especially to the people in Alaska, the universal services. And Kurt, please talk about it. Competitive, non-competitive, all we want, it doesn't have a damn thing to do with it. I mean, he's articulated that. But I have a thought. We got a motion on the floor. I'll withdraw the motion.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you
about.
Would you rather have, I'm going to ask you now, as prime sponsor of this legislation, member of the committee, would it be your preference to have a committee substitute before the committee so that people would know what it was addressing and what we were looking
at? You're going to have committee substitute 1 and committee substitute 2, and if the other garbage is on it, it's going over.
Okay, well, if that's what you want, I would entertain a motion to adopt a committee substitute, but not to pass the bill out this time. We'll hold it over. But if you want to put a committee substitute in.
I just want to solve the problem. If any of you have the issue, you can talk to Jim, or you can talk to Jerry, and probably this man here who knows the most about it. But it is, as you say.
The motion before the committee then is to adopt Representative Boucher's proposed motion, which is in writing in your packets, as a committee substitute before the Labor and Commerce Committee. Is there any objection to that motion? Seeing no objection, the committee substitute has been adopted by the committee, and then we'll have a subsequent hearing on that, or whether or not how to proceed with the bill.
Conceptually.
Okay. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
It's 3:05.
Sorry, guys.